It's time now for the Todd Leonard Show. Leave those negative stories behind as we focus on the positive and hear from those who give back and help others. Let's start your day with some inspirational stories. Now, here's your host, Todd Leonard.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We have a great show today. We have Russ Holden, PGA Pro for over 35 years, golf coach, all-around great guy. Started caddy for a cure over 18 years ago. We're going to explore his amazing college career. We're going to talk about golf. Everybody's starting to get out, hit the courses again. We really talk about his humanity and just what a difference he's made over the many years of giving back. Russ, are you with us this morning, sir?
I sure am, Todd. It's a pleasure to be with you, and great to hear your voice and see you, if you will, through the phone lines here.
Thank you. Thank you, Russ, and I appreciate it. You know, I was thinking about how I bamboozled you onto the show, and I was thinking about the FedEx tournament and running into you twice and talking about Caddy for a Cure and everything you stand for in your life. And I was like, you know, I started the show. Like, let me reach out to Russ. So I really appreciate it. So it means a lot, Russ. As I hope you appreciate just how much I really care about what you're doing. So let's talk a little bit about yourself, Russ, because a lot of folks really don't know much about you. I know a lot since I follow golf, and I know your commitment to the PGA Tour and all the things you've done. But I really want to talk a little bit about your background. I know you were an extraordinary golfer growing up. When did you first learn that you had the gift of golf? Because everybody has different sports they're into. And for the listeners, Russ is a tall, handsome gentleman, and I'm sure it'd have been great in any sport. But why golf?
You know, it's funny. My dad, as a youngster, would take me out to the golf course. I had an uncle who had achieved a great deal of success and played on the PGA Tour after his Army duty. It was back in the days before there was a bunch of qualifying. If you just wanted to go out and play, you could play on the PGA Tour way back when. It wasn't as difficult as it was today. But my dad was also an avid golfer, and I actually hated the game when I was a kid. I dreaded going to the golf course. I didn't really enjoy it all that much. I mean, it wasn't the end of the world, but there was a lot of things that I would rather do. Growing up in Michigan, playing hockey and baseball, you know, golf just wasn't my thing. And then I don't know exactly what age it was. I think it was about 14, 15 years old. My dad entered me in a junior tournament, and I won, actually. I played well and won. And I got, for whatever reason, this one tournament that I had played in gave trophies out that were like the same size as you. And I got a trophy that was about 3 feet tall, and I thought that was probably one of the coolest things I'd ever done, and I was hooked. I couldn't wait, and I wanted more of that, so I started playing a lot more, and as I started playing a lot more, I got a lot better and started playing high school golf and then went on and played college golf and everything like that. So it was really kind of fate that I would win that big trophy that one day, and it kind of turned me on to play golf.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. You came right out and you won something. I'm not that tall, so the trophy certainly could have been my size. You're a little taller than me, I'm sure, even back in the high school days. So I wanted to talk about, you know, you were good enough in researching to play, you know, college golf. You're All-American at Malone University. And I was going through a little bit of your background about the odyssey of how you ended up at Malone University, because I understood that wasn't your first prior thought process. I think you were trying to go to Arizona, and somehow life kind of, you know, went in another direction. Kind of walk us through that, Russ.
Yeah, again, that's a very interesting story, because I really didn't know what I was going to do. I knew I wanted to play some golf. I'd played junior college golf in Detroit, and ironically, I had qualified to go to Nationals out in Odessa, Texas, and the guy that I actually got paired with in the qualifier, who would later become my best friend and my best man in my wedding, and both of us exchanged best man duties, but he was down in Cleveland, and I was in Detroit, and you know, this is way back when, before we had cell phones and text messages and all that kind of stuff. And I went down and spent some time with them, and we were up one night playing some ping pong and eating some cinnamon rolls in the middle of the night, and I asked him where he was going, what he was going to do for his school, and he said he was going to this great place then called Malone College in Canton. And, you know, we explored, you know, would I even be interested in considering that. And the next thing happened, their home course was Firestone in Akron. And the next thing, he was on the phone with the coach the next morning, and we went down and played Firestone, which was, for me, one of the greatest treats of my life. And I played well, and I realized that I could actually contribute to the golf team. And he and I would end up being roommates. And then the final sale was coach told me that the spring trip was going to Hawaii. And when I heard that, plus being able to play Firestone on a daily basis, plus being able to room with my new best friend and contribute and play number one or number two on the golf team and a full scholarship, I couldn't say yes fast enough. And looking back, that was really one of the most fateful days of my life, because it just moved golf and everything in my whole career to a completely different perspective. And coach, to this day, he's been there at 48 years now, Coach Ken Hyland. I still talk to coach at minimally once every two or three weeks, and he's still an active part of my life, even from that day back in 1979.
Yeah, what a great story. And I understand that you, Coach Hyland, is an extraordinary coach, and I think they won the national championship, I guess, in 2004 or so. And I recall also, from what I was reading about you, Russ, because I had to be prepared. I have to act like I know what I'm doing for you and all the listeners, is coaching life. I read that you consider Coach Hyland not only a great golf coach and mentor in the great game of golf, but the coach in life. And I always like to explore that for our listeners in terms of life's paths and journeys and who influences your life, because some person could have such a dramatic impact you don't even realize it at the time. So Coach Hyland, you have such a relationship with him. When did you start to realize the importance in your life of the coach?
Well, it was post, you know, I really enjoyed my time at Malone. He was a great guy and a great coach, and he was a good player. He won the national championship individually. He beat a guy from the Oklahoma School of Optometry, we might have heard of, Dr. Gil Morgan. Right. Coach beat him and another tour player, Jim Masserio, in 1968 to win the NAIA championship, and was a good player. And he chose a life, instead of going on tour, he decided to be an educator, which says a lot about him, that he would dedicate his whole life to helping others and teaching youngsters instead of going and chasing the bright lights of the PGA Tour. But even though I enjoyed my time at Malone, he was great while I was there. It was really post my experience at Malone that I really began to realize it as what an inspirational and totally terrific man he was. And I hope I'm not cutting ahead too much, but you know, my daughter Kayla is an accomplished player herself, and we just went through the recruiting process here for a couple of years, and we spoke to a great deal of schools, and every one of the coaches asked me what I was looking for, and it seemed kind of hokey, but I was determined that was what my right answer was. I guess most people ask for a full scholarship, or they want their kids to play and this and that, but I said, all things being equal, if we have a good playing ground, a good facility, good academics, she's going to have a good, safe experience at school. Most importantly for me is I'm looking for Kayla's Ken Hyland, and that brought a bunch of head looks, and you know, everyone's head whipped around, and who in the world is Ken Hyland? And I went to explain to him that, you know, here I am now 35 years removed from school or more, and I still speak to coach. And that's what I was looking for my daughter, that she would have a person of character and integrity that would step into her life and be part of her life as a mentor, as a discipler, as just a friend for years and years and years. And we believe we found that in the University of Tennessee.
No question. I mean, I'm friends with you on Facebook, and I've seen you post pictures of your daughter, and she's got one heck of a swing, and I guess she follows in your footsteps, because I can certainly see she's got, you know, the rhythm and the tempo. But you also posted, you know, it's in the dirt, and I realize, you know, how important, when you're going to be a great golfer, you got to practice your fanny off, so I kind of got a kick out of that. And as an aside, I have two diaper dandies somewhere down the road there for you, Russ. So my son Alexander, he's turning six. We're going to hit the range later today. I promised I was going to talk to you about golf and then take him to the range. But the big debate in the Leonard residence is, which golf ball is better, Titleist or Bridgestone. And it's a fascinating discussion. I'm like, Alexander, what do you know about Bridgestone golf balls? He said, well, Tiger Woods played, you know, Bridgestone. So this is what I'm putting up with, you know. So I got a little work in front of me. So in, it's just, you know, well, you know golf. I mean, it's just, it's either in your blood or it's not. So in terms of your collegiate career, I also read there was a song called Pieces that was very important to you in your life, as we discuss this again with you today, your life's journey. The song Pieces, can you tell us about that?
Wow, you're good.
Thank you. I was thought sooner or later I'd get a little props.
I had a good career at Malone and went on to try to play for a living. I humorously always like to say that I decided I like to eat on a regular basis, and it wasn't going to allow me to be able to do that, so I wisely chose a different route in golf. I knew my life was going to be golf. I just didn't know in what realm, and I went into being a club professional, and again, some more fate, because we had Masters champion Bernhard Langer lived at the club where I ended up getting my first head professional's job, and I was able as a result of that to give back quite a bit to Malone through the years, through various, whether it be fundraising, whether it be offering opportunities to come hang out with Bernhard and play golf, and offering our club up as spring break opportunities, and was able to really give back a great deal to the university. But I was awarded Hall of Fame status at the school in 1994, I think it was, and in my speech, I went back and looked at the song Pieces, because the pieces, you know, as we look back in hindsight, we're able to see that day at Firestone Country Club and that day that I decided to quit playing, and that all the different days that, you know, kind of come and go. We live, oh, that was a nice day, or that was good, or that. And then in hindsight, when you get to somewhat of the in the future, and you look back and you say, wow, you know, that piece and then that piece and then that piece. And there was a Christian group called the Imperials had come up with a song about the pieces of your life and how they all fit together. And I really believed in that song, and it really meant a lot to me. And I used that sort of my speech of acceptance being inducted into the Hall of Fame. But good for you. I'm going to watch what I say from now on around you, because that's pretty deep that you would know that and find that out. I don't know if there could have been a couple hundred people at that awards banquet that night, but that's good that you found
that out. Well, no. But truth be told, you told me you've done like hundreds of interviews, so I'm like, hold on now. To go deep into Google, God bless Google, and find out a little bit more about my friend Russ Holden. You can't learn everything on Facebook. So, on a serious note, I do agree. You know, everybody touches your lives in different ways, and hopefully in a positive fashion. Now, you mentioned your country club. You're at Woodfield Country Club in Boca Raton, Florida, and Bernhard Langer. For the listeners, from what I understand, and you know, I've actually seen him play, is an extraordinary golfer. He's even having no disrespect to his pro career prior to the Champions Tour, but he's really lit it up on the Champions Tour. But it seemed to me from learning about his career and your involvement with him, the way it started was kind of interesting to me. Can you tell us a little bit about how that relationship evolved with Bernhard Langer, extraordinary golfer? We're going to get to the Masters in 2004 in a little bit, but just when you first met him and how that all kind of worked together.
Yeah, you know, and again, going back to the pieces thing, I was serving as an assistant at Deer Creek Country Club in Deerfield Beach, and I was quite happy there. As a matter of fact, I lived right on the 16th hole. We had bought a small condo there, and we were living there. I was taking a cart home from work. I could walk to work. I was only two holes away from the clubhouse, and I was going to a church where a family called the Barber family in Boca Raton had a housing facility or housing community they were building called the Woodfield Hunt Club, and they built it in phases, phase one, phase two, and then the third phase was going to be Woodfield Country Club, where I had heard they were building a golf course, a Joe Lee a golf course over there, And I got a call one day, and they asked me to come to lunch down at the down in downtown Boca Raton. And I had no idea really what they wanted. I was good friends with them. And when I got up to lunch, they said they were building a golf course, and they wanted me to be the golf professional. So I was way too young. I was way too inexperienced, and I had no idea what I was doing. So I said the only thing that you could possibly say in that circumstance is, of course, I'll take the job. And I did. And they gave it to me, and when there were some trials and tribulations that went into that opening up and whatnot, but there it was. I was the head professional, and I got to meet Bernhard Langer, and you know, his coach Willie Hoffman would come over and spend time with Bernhard in the first part of the year, in January and February, in the warm, you know, months of Florida and cold everywhere else. And he would come out there, and I was like a sponge. Every opportunity that I possibly could, where I wasn't doing something else as in my responsibilities as head professional, I was standing there trying to soak all the information in I possibly could. And they were very kind that they would speak some English as well, because I didn't know one word of German. And it was fascinating to me. And Willie would ultimately leave. And again, it was back in the days before we could, you know, use V1 and our cell phones to video and things like that. It was a much different world. And Willie would leave, and Bernhard would want to continue on with his work. And I was kind of Johnny on the spot. I was the second eyes for Bernhard, and that developed into a nice little coaching realm where Bernhard would rely on me and my eyes, and again working with Willie as the main coach to know what was going on. And that's when it developed into a really good friendship. And then ironically, I got the call one day from Bernhard where his longtime caddy Pete Coleman couldn't make it for the PGA Championship, in fact at Crooked Stick, and he asked me if I would be willing to caddy, and if I wanted a caddy. And I said, well, of course. And I had done everything in the world of golf. I'd worked in the bag room, in the pro shop, on the driving range. I had done everything my whole career except caddy. I had never caddied one time in my life. I just, for whatever reason, it just wasn't something that worked in my cards, and I always wanted to do something different in golf. And other guys did caddy when they were young, but I never did. And there I was caddying as a PGA professional in the PGA Championship for my first time. For I think he was ranked number 3 in the world at the time.
Well, talk about walking into something. What was that like when you basically? And I talked to, you know, we have a number of really incredible guests on over the last eight plus months, but about trying something different and the fear factor and just pushing through the fear and just going for it, and you know, don't worry about other people, what they might say about, just follow your dream, follow your heart, do your best. But when you were there, and you know, Bernhard was at obviously an extremely high level, to get to third in the world is you know, an incredible feat to do. What was that like? Just, you know, you're carrying the bag and you're like in the hunt, in the mix.
It scared the living daylights out of me. I don't think I'd ever been that nervous on a golf course. The first day, you know, practice rounds were pretty cool. I got to meet Seve Ballesteros, who was my hero growing up. I had gotten to meet Jack Nicklaus. I got to meet Arnold Palmer. I got to meet Greg Norman. All the big names of the day would all come over and say hi to Bernhard. He was the Masters champion 1985, first time, and here he was, you know, relatively fresh off of that, and again, a very, very good player. And my first day, I will never forget walking up to the first tee. I guarantee I was shaking more than Bernhard ever was. And we played with Mark O'Meara and John Cook that first round, and I thought, well, this will be easy, you know, I'm going to caddy. And then I realized, you know, as we got into it, that there were just so many things that that I had done so effortlessly and mindlessly as a player, that you know, I was on a different side. It was more on a servant side, where you're really there for him. You're 100% there for him. Whatever he needs, that's your job, to make sure that he's well and that he's contained and has everything he needs. And that's a completely different side than the other side, which is just playing and worrying about your own game and shots and things like that. It didn't take me long to adapt. I really enjoyed it. I liked it. Once I got past that first couple of holes, I really kind of got into it and almost sort of started role playing, you know, as far as a servant, and he's the boss, and that's just the way it went out there, and I really enjoyed it. I guess I did an okay job because he invited me back.
Right. Well, you also, though, Russ, have the unique ability Obviously, being a caddy, you know a lot about the game, but also being a coach. So you could also, you have another perspective on it, right, in terms of your skill set and what you could bring to a pro golfer, which is invaluable for everyone listening. Golf is an elusive game. I played it for many years. It's a weird sport. One day you got it. I'm not a pro, of course, but one day you're playing really well. The next day you're like, or what, next hole, what happened? So I'm sure you he relied on your skills as a coach as well, right, over the years?
He did, yeah. I mean, it first started out as a coach that there was a bunch of things. He and Pete had been together, I think, for, gosh, at that time, I don't know, 18 years. It was quite a long stretch. And what happens is when you get out there, you know, it's almost kind of like being married, you know, that you have a good relationship and everything's fine, but, you know, the jokes get stale and the time gets stale. And Pete has he's English. He's a great guy, wonderful guy. And, you know, he's just been out there a long time with Bernhard. Bernhard's a really hard worker. He works really, really hard. And, you know, I was a little bit different. I had some new jokes and I had a different personality and I came from a different paradigm, and as well, being his coach, you know, Bernhard really lapped that up, that, you know, he could be out there and possibly having, you know, start hitting it poorly or sideways or whatever. And, you know, I was right there where maybe Pete didn't have that opportunity to be able to come in from a coaching perspective and talk about all those things. So I was kind of a breath of fresh air. And again, for a long time, I think it was 10 or 11 years, I filled in just a couple of weeks a year as a fill-in. And I think it was just a breath of fresh air for Bernhard to have I was a friend first, a coach second, and then, you know, moderately okay caddy, I guess you could say, you know, coming in and just taking place for Pete as sort of a fill-in. And frankly, a lot of guys now have somewhat transferred into that method. There's many guys out there, Louis Oosthuizen comes to mind, where he shares a couple of caddies. Greg and Dutchie share away. Sergio did that for a long time and just keeps things fresh where you don't always have the same exact mode. And that worked out very, very well for Bernhard and I starting out.
Right. And I know Jason Day also has a great relationship with his caddy coach. I mean, it's a unique relationship. So I wanted to, you know, ask you, because you love golf, you grew up in golf. I grew up in Springfield, so, you know, Baltusrol Royal Country Club. I mean, I was a golf nut growing up. My only caddy story, just kind of talk about my caddy experience. You'll get a chuckle out of this. So I was carrying two bags at Baltusrol. I was so proud. I got out, did the loop, you know. It's so hot. I mean, I'm like sweating. I'm dying. I'm in high school, but I mean, you know, trying to show my parents I'm an industrious young man. I'm like, okay, well, at least I'm going to get paid. The guy gave me a melted chocolate bar. So that was my caddy experience. So, that was the, my rise and fall as a caddy. But no, growing up in Springfield, I mean, a lot of my buddies, we go on golf trips and we've had wonderful times on the golf course. But I want to get your view, and we're going to get to your incredible caddy for a tour in a minute, but life's lessons that you get in this wonderful game of golf and how it informs you and your family and just how you think you benefited by the game of golf, not simply just playing it, but life's lessons.
Wow, that's a big question. I mean, two things come to mind. You know, that when I switched from, you know, wanting to play hockey, when I switched from playing hockey to playing golf, one of the big things that I realized was that it really rests on your shoulders. While there are a bunch of people to thank, you know, if you get to the highest levels, your coach, your caddy, and things like that, I mean, you're still the one that has to pull the trigger and hit the shots and do it, and you really have no one to thank but yourself. And again, vice versa, if you hit bad shots, you really have no one to blame but yourself. And as opposed to a team thing where you might be a poor player, but you're on a really good team with a bunch of other really good players, and you may have to, you know, you might have the joy of hosting up the trophy, but maybe you didn't really commit all that much, or vice versa. You could be the best player on the team, and maybe your surrounding players aren't maybe as good as you are, and you could lose even though you were the best players possibly in the whole league. And that dynamic really really intrigued me. I like that. I'm an only child. I didn't have any brothers or sisters growing up, so that might have had something to do with it. But, you know, the other thing is that when Kayla first got really attracted to the game, I used to take her out on tour, as sort of a daddy-daughter. I always gave her a choice. One week out of the year, you can come with me and we'll do caddy for a cure together. And, you'll come with me. She always liked Los Angeles. So we would go to the LA Open at Riviera, and she liked Hollywood and everything else that would go around it. And, I have a real good friend that owns a very nice facility called Bighorn Country Club out in Palm Desert. And, we had the opportunity to go out and spend a couple of days with him. And Kayla was really just getting going. And, we had a whole day out there where the owner being much older, and his girlfriend being slightly younger, four different dynamics, really diverse dynamics. And here we are at one of the world's most exclusive clubs. This is the who's who of the world. For example, we're having dinner, and Speaker John Boehner was literally sitting right behind me. This is the real movers and shakers of the whole world. And I mentioned, I reached over and said to Kayla, I said, you know, Kayla, if it weren't for golf, unless we were here pressure cleaning somebody's house, there's probably a real good chance that we would have never got inside the gates here at the Bighorn Country Club. And on the way home, she actually said, you know what, Dad, I kind of get it. Golf is such a great game because it can allow you to go so many different places that maybe you otherwise would never have been able to go to or do. And that always struck me. And you know, obviously, I already mentioned here's the result. Look where Kayla's going as a result of golf. So golf is just so cool. You can talk golf whether you're in Johannesburg or São Paulo or New York City. You find another golfer waiting or on a plane or whatever, and two golfers can get together and talk golf for hours. And I think it's just an incredible bond between people.
Right. I mean, there's no question. I love it. I don't get a chance to play nearly as much as I want between my business and my kids, which are beyond a blessing. But my little guy loves it now, so it's kind of rejuvenating my love for the game more. We watch the Golf Channel constantly. But it's more life's lessons about, as we just touched on, is it opens the doors in a lot of ways. And I know the level of effort to be really good at golf, you got to really work hard at it. You got to be really committed to it. And it does fall on your shoulders, win, lose, or draw. So, Russ, before we take a break, I want to now talk about Caddy for a Cure while you're on the show, besides just talk about your great golf career, and we could talk about golf for hours and hours. But Caddy for a Cure, when did that start? What was the impetus for you to create something that was just so striking to me about the kind of person you are? What was the evolution of that?
Well, going back to the time that we just spoke about at Woodfield Country Club, I really won't ever forget it. A tall, good-looking guy came walking through my doors as I was serving for the head professional at Woodfield, and he had been playing baseball, and he had double Tommy John surgery, ended his pitching career. And he had made enough money in baseball that he was driving his wife crazy at home. And he said, hey, look, I love to play golf, and I just want to be in the golf business. And he was completely overqualified. The only thing I really had available was I had a job in the bag room. I said, well, you know, if you want to work in the bag room, you can. And he took it. A few months later, my assistant left, and he moved up. But I knew within a couple of days that this guy that I had hired, we were going to be life friends. He was we were on the same level with regards to family, with regards to faith, with regards to beliefs, and just had the same kind of personality. He was just a great guy, and in fact we're still brothers right now to this day. But on August 25th, 1993, his wife gave birth to their second child, Christian Thomas Collins. And Christian was born with a rare bone marrow disorder called Fanconi anemia. And I thought long and hard about Caddy for a Cure and when did it start and how did this all come about. But I'll never forget, we knew there was problems. We knew there were problems before birth, and we obviously knew there were tremendous problems after birth. That one of the effects of Fanconi anemia is they they come into this world with a tremendous amount of birth defects. Christian is missing the radii bone, so he's missing both his thumbs. He's very, very small because it is a bone marrow disorder. He has a hole in his heart. He has a bunch of vertebrae that are fused together. And, again, very, very, very small because the bones just didn't develop and grow the way they were supposed to because of the blood disorder. But I'll never forget, I was really afraid to see Christian. It was maybe a couple of weeks after he'd been born. I hadn't seen him yet, and I'd just been hearing about it. And he got out of the ICU, and they brought him home. And here comes Mom walking down the hallway, and I can see her in my office, and she's got her car carrier right there. And she's swinging him around, and the next thing I know is boom, that car carrier's on my desk. And she pulls the blankets back, and I looked inside. And I had two kids at the time. They were both, thank God, born healthy. And the sight of seeing Christian, that innocent little face and that innocent little body that really had nothing to do with this, to be plagued by Fanconi anemia and all the lethality that goes along with it, it just touched me. And I knew right there the very second I laid eyes on him that somehow, somewhere in this world, we have to do something about this. And I have no idea what I'm going to do. I have no idea what that meant. I just know that it really touched me. It really bothered me. And there's something that I want to do about it. So well, fast forward a little bit, they had two more healthy kids, three and four. Connor and Cameron Collins were born healthy, and then on July 2nd, 1998, Kalen Collins was born, and he also has FA, we call it, Fanconi anemia, and he also has all the attributes physically that go along with that, and that was it. That put me right over the top. We're going to do something.
Yeah, Russ, and this is a really important background. We're just going to take a really short break be back. Right in 30 seconds.
The Todd Leonard Show is sponsored by the Leonard Foundation, whose mission is to support the children and families who are battling pediatric cancer and those in need of food and assistance, women's shelters, and other important social services in the community. They also proudly support those fighting pancreatic cancer. They feel it's vitally important to help those in need in our amazing community when they need us the most. Please join them in extending a helping hand and go to leonardcharity.org and donate now. Together, we can touch many lives.
So, Russ, you were just telling us the compelling story, the background, the backdrop of how you created Caddy for a Cure. Your great friend, Mr. Collins, had two children born with this disease, and you were just telling us about how difficult it would be for these little beautiful babies. So I know you said at some point you were wanting to do something. And what did you do as a result?
Well, there I was, with this piece, you know, on my shoulders with the Collins family back home with Christian and Kalen, and there I was caddying for Bernhard, and I was like a kid in a candy store. I was enjoying it. I'm walking down these fairways, and you know, tens of thousands of people are watching us and looking at us, and here I had a thought where, gosh, you know, there's so many people out there that would really do about anything to be able to trade places. What is it like to be a tour caddy? What's it like to be inside the ropes? What's it like to be standing next to Bernhard Langer and Seve Ballesteros and all these other players? And I had an idea, and I started talking about it with Bernhard, and went to a bunch of our circle, Tom Lehman and Fred Couples and Corey Pavin and a bunch of other players, and you know, I bounced it off of them, and they all thought it was a great idea. They all really liked it, and my wife is very well educated. She has an MBA in finance as well as marketing, and you know, we sat down and drafted up a proposal to the PGA Tour and started having some meetings and got our 501c3 status in order, and went up and I went back and forth for almost a year with the PGA Tour answering all the what-ifs with regards to Caddy for a Cure and this concept that we had, and they gave us the okay, and they gave us a very short leash. They wanted us to do a limited number of events and a limited number of players, and they wanted us to go ahead and execute that, and then we would reconvene after those were done, and we would measure the impact on the players, on the tournaments, on the fans, and you know, how it all worked out. And luckily, I had all these great names that were in our court starting out. So I kind of again came attached at the hip with Blue Blood with Bernhard Langer, and he helped quite a bit. Offered his bag up, if you will, for many occasions early on, and we had a great run that first year. Everything went perfectly, and the PGA Tour, gracefully accepted us and said you can continue. And here we are, 18 years later. I never would have a million years ever imagined. I never had an end in mind. I only had the beginning. And as Bubba says, we never got that far in our dream. But it's really been great. We've enjoyed it now for 18 years, seeing all the civilians come out and be able to walk inside the ropes. And it never gets old. It's always the same. It's always new. It's exciting. It's fresh. And I get excited when I'm on the first tee. And I see that same look that I had way back when at Crooked Stick, when I was on the first tee with Bernhard and Mark O'Meara and John Cook.
So, Russ, for the listeners, it's an incredible thing. How do they reach out to Caddy for a Cure? What's the website? How do they reach you?
Yeah, we got a great website, caddyforacure.com. And, Todd, we spell it with a Y, CaddyForAcure. A-C-U-R-E, caddyforacure.com, and you can go there and see all the other charities that we've been able to support, a lot of testimonies, some really cool videos throughout that, and just read all about us. And, right now, obviously, we're in a little unique situation with the world of golf and life in general, being in this pandemic, and our schedule's a little bit up in the air right now for this year. We don't really know what's going to happen here. Nobody really does. And we're just kind of patiently waiting and waiting for us to return to golf, as the PGA Tour calls it. And we're looking forward to putting some players up there. But when you go to the site, obviously we don't have anything up right now, but there will be some things coming. And what we recommend is just reach out to me. You can use the contact form, or my personal email is on there. You can reach out to me, and what we do is make a marriage happen. If you have a favorite player and a favorite venue that you'd like to try to caddy at, reach out to me and let me know, and we'll try to make that happen for you.
So, Russ, for the listeners, this is just an incredible opportunity. I'm a golf nut, as we were talking about, just probably not in general, but we throw golf in since we're talking to you today. We just add something else on next time. But it gives an opportunity, right, for a fan to walk in between the ropes, hang out with one of the top players in the world, talk to the caddies of that top player, get such a unique experience, and just walk us through a little bit more about what the benefits are for the folks that want to, be a caddy for the day, and what they really get, the benefits from your perspective.
Yeah, so each experience is kind of like a snowflake. It's either each one is unique and different, but what we try to do is give you an inside the tour look at golf. And we generally, our caddy day is typically on Wednesdays. So what we do is I typically come into town on Monday, and then I'll be there and acquire all the credentials and everything that you're gonna need and get. You're gonna get VIP parking. You're gonna get your credentials for you and some guests that if you want to, bring family along or friends or anything, and they want to come watch you. But Tuesday is really one of my favorite times because it's kind of a free day. We're able to go on site, and through the grace of the PGA Tour, allowing us to have some all access materials and badges and whatnot. Then we take you up and down the range, introduce you to a lot of players, get to watch, right from the range, guys warming up and really getting ready to participate and compete for millions of dollars in, again, just a few days. We go in the locker room, have a quick look in there. We go through the equipment trailers, which is always fascinating. We never know who's going to be in the equipment trailers when we get in there. But, again, you get to see golf at its very, very, very highest levels, up close and personal. Really, really a unique, once-in-a-lifetime experience. I mean, hey, you're not going to get to warm up, a pitcher down in the bullpen at Yankee Stadium or go in the locker room for an NFL team, but golf has this unique, amazing way of being able to offer this up. And again, Tuesday is one of my favorite days. Typically, we'll have dinner on Tuesday night. I always invite the caddy, the the professional tour caddy that's going to participate with us the next day, and they often come. I'll offer it up to the player as well, and we've had a few that have joined us, which has been delightful. But Wednesday, the next day, typically we meet about an hour before the tea time, whether it be morning or afternoon or whenever that is, and you're the caddy for the day. The PGA Tour caddy goes along with you. We always tell everybody, we encourage everybody, that you can get as involved or as uninvolved as you want. And most importantly, we want you to have a good time. I'm not gonna gloss it over. If you haven't done it before, it can be difficult. We lighten the bag as much as you possibly can. It weighs about 25 pounds. Usually adrenaline, since you're working with one of the best players in the whole world, will usually carry you through. But should you happen to get to a time and you go 5, 6, 7 holes and you say, man, this is hard, you know, I could use a break for a hole or two, the tour caddy's right there to take over. We do this every day, every week. And, again, it's no problem at all to for them to come in. You stay inside the ropes, and maybe you might just do some towel duty and some putter duty for a little bit. But you form a unique bond with your player and your tour caddy that's unlike anything else. You're right there. You're engaged in every single shot that they hit. You get to hear a lot of the banter that you maybe otherwise wouldn't get to hear, even playing with them. And it's just really an incredible opportunity and experience to see golf at its highest levels right up close and personal.
Yeah, it's a wonderful opportunity. I reached out to one of my friends, Paul Tracy, who's done it a few times with you guys, and he just raved about the experience, about being involved with Caddy for a Cure, and just really a lifetime of memories. I wanted to ask you, Russ, because I remember I met you on one of those practice days, actually 2 days in a row a number of years ago, over at Ridgewood Country Club at a FedEx tournament. And I was talking to you, and I was asking, how'd you get involved? You know, a little bit about your background, and you mentioned your late mom. And for the listeners, because I always like to understand as best I can the human condition and what really lights someone's fire, when you get that purpose, what impact do your parents have on your lives or other, you know, friends, how they could impact you. You really talked about your late mom and what she meant to you and what she stood for. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, my mom had gone through a bunch of different things in her life, and she passed away a few years ago at 80 years old. And when she passed, you know, we give eulogies and things like that at her celebration. I talked about, you know, at 80 years old, you could divide it up into quarters, but since we're golfers, golf tournaments are made up of four rounds. So first round, second round, third round. Well, her most important round was her last round, her final round, her last 20 years of her life. She spent working for a great organization here in South Florida called Food for the Poor. And she actually went in and frankly wasn't suited for the position, let's just say, when she started. And she finished very, very strong. She raised in her lifetime over $32 million to feed the poor, and they primarily work through Central America, through the Caribbean, Haiti, Jamaica, Barbados, the countries down in that Panama region, Guatemala, Belize, and she traveled to most of these places where he could build a home and feed an entire family for a whole year for a couple thousand dollars. And she got engaged very similar to I did, the way I was with Caddy for a Cure. And she was a real junkyard dog out there raising money. And she left this world a much, much better place. And there are many people that are alive right now and living very nice lives with health and safety and whatnot as a result of my mom being here. And it was really impactful for me to sit back and watch a person, again, ill-suited for the position when they started, to develop and mold into the person that she ended up being working for this great organization.
Incredible. And that's what I remember when we were standing out in the rough, and I, you were just telling me a little bit about it, and I was like, wow, you know, that's a beautiful lady and what she did to make the world a better place. And little did I know I would do my best to drag you on a few years later, but I'm so happy you're joining us this morning. I know that your mom obviously meant the world to you. Looking back, because you've been doing Caddy for a Cure for 18 plus years. It's going strong. I pray it continues for many, many more years to come because it does so many wonderful things. What got you involved? What made you, your heart open up? Mr. Collins, you hit it off, but why? What was it inside that made you decide? Because a lot of people want to help, but they really never do. They think about it. They don't step up. What do you think really was the catalyst?
Well, I know it was the touch, but, I had another one of those pieces, as we referred to earlier, where when I was trying to get that job at Woodfield Country Club, I mentioned some trials and tribulations. Well, the club experienced some delays in opening, and I had left my job as an assistant to take over, and I got notified that there were going to be some delays, and I had gone too far. I couldn't go back and get my other assistant's job, and it wasn't going to be that long. So I ended up taking an odd job just to help us survive and get by, and it was a very difficult job. It was full-time professional painting. We were painting nice homes down here in South Florida. My brother-in-law was running a company, and he hired me, and I didn't like it very much. And we had gotten rid of one of our cars, and anyway, I only had one station on the radio, and it was an AM radio station, and it was called the Winners Network, and they played constant media from guys like Jim Rohn and Tony Robbins and Zig Ziglar, and lo and behold, Zig Ziglar, here's this guy that I'm listening to and never heard of Zig Ziglar, or what is Zig Ziglar, and he was coming to speak at our, my church, as a matter of fact, down here in South Florida, and I couldn't wait. I went to a conference where he spoke all weekend, and he actually gave the church service on Sunday morning, and I'll never forget. I'm not a real big celebrity guy, believe it or not. Here I work with all these celebrities, and they're just really good at what they do. Todd Leonard's really good at what he does, and I look at everybody that way. But something about it said, I need to meet this guy. I want to shake his hand. And I waited in line for quite a while, and I finally got up there, and I was next up, and I had no idea what I was going to say. And there he is, and I'm shaking hands with him, and I said, hey, I understand you like to play golf. And I said, if you ever get this way, here's my card. I'm at a real nice club, and, let's get together. Well, that card giving ended up turning into Zig being like a second father to me. He took me up on it, and we played some golf, and he became my like family. And a long-winded answer, but you told me about it, and you kind of touched on it, that a lot of people hear about things and they're touched by it. Zig had a little coin that he used to give out, and it used to say to it on it, and it was round, and he would hand it to you, and he'd say it's a get round to it, and he always encouraged you to not dally and not wait for things. That if you are touched by something, don't put it off. Don't wait till you retire. Don't wait till the money becomes just right. You just get round to it. And I had that same feeling, and he instilled that in me. That we could wait all my whole life here and say, I'd really like to do something about that, and that really touches me. But it's time that we get around to it, and that's exactly what we did with Caddy for a Cure, and he's the ultimate impetus that pushed me over the top.
Incredible story, and it's amazing, like you just touched on, how something like that just changes not just your life, but you touch so many. I would be so remiss if I didn't talk about a few other things you've been involved with Caddy for a Cure. I'm so proud to be an American. I have so much respect, for the veterans, for the brave men and women that serve our country so ably. Some sadly pay the ultimate sacrifice. Some have grievous injuries. Some obviously have mental scars that run so deep. But I know you have a big commitment to the military, and I wanted to ask you about that with Caddy for a Cure and your love and devotion to those brave men and women, because it really was so touching when I was trying to understand more about Russ Holden and the person. Tell us about that.
Well, again, it's another one of those pieces. I was caddying. I will never forget that day. I was caddying at the Valero Texas Open at La Cantera. Then it was at La Cantera in San Antonio, which is right next to the Brook Medical Center. So most of our wounded, when they get injured, they go to either Walter Reed or Brook Medical Center. And the PGA Tour is just such an incredible organization. They are so military patriotic, it's beyond words. I can't even begin to talk about what a great organization they are for our military and specifically our wounded with Buries for the Brave and everything that they do. But there I was. Bernhard hits a lot of balls, and I was getting a little punchy. I remember it well, and watching every shot in the hot sun of Texas. And I looked down, and here they came. The PGA Tour was walking six young men down the range that had all lost legs. All six of them had lost their leg. And you know, Frank Licklider, another tour player, was standing right next to us. And I've adopted what he said. You know, even though they've had a terrific accident, doesn't mean that they still don't love to watch golf, especially golf at the highest levels. And it is fascinating to watch someone who's the best in the world at what they do perform their skill, whether it's throwing a football or hitting a baseball or shooting a basketball or hitting a golf ball. And golf is just perfect for that. And the sight of these young men, who all happen to be, by the way, about the same age as my two boys, it was chilling to me to know that they had raised their right hand for us to be able to have those relative freedoms and liberties that we enjoyed standing out there on the range in relative safety. And they were going to be affected by this for the rest of their life. So if Todd Leonard could come out and caddy for Ricky Fowler as a civilian, why couldn't Todd be escorted by a wounded service member? And the light went off in my head. You know, we'd been doing Caddy for a Cure for a few years, and again, this is 2005. And I went to the tour, and it took the PGA Tour maybe about 3 megaseconds to say, yeah, we like that, and we're all behind that. And it was at that moment that we morphed. Again, Fanconi and Nemeo will always be the impetus behind our program and why we started it. But frankly, I didn't know it then, but I look back now, that we really kind of morphed into a military charity, if you will, providing these experiences and really becoming big adopters of all these men and women that we get to contact with and have touch with into our Caddy for a Cure family.
It's beautiful. You know, I was at the FedEx tournament. I'm an autograph hound. What can I say? Guilty as charged. My great room is littered with the number of flags. I always feel bad when the FedEx doesn't roll through New Jersey or close enough. Law commitments, I can't get there. But I do love being up close. And like you just touched on, these are the greatest players in the world. So you feel like you're within greatness. Maybe it'll rub off a little bit. But I've seen what you're talking about with the military, and it's really striking again to see these handsome warriors with their prosthesis. And all the respect and the interaction between the player and that hero. And I remember watching Justin Rose. I scampered over to see the end of that, and I was just struck by, like, Justin Rose was a wonderful guy, but just like the interaction, it was really touching to me to see that really the love the tour players really have for the military. I think it's a beautiful thing to watch, and I urge everyone to visit Caddy for a Cure. You know, I was also, when I asked you some background questions about yourself, you also were involved in the Navy Blue Angels Foundation for 9 years. How did that all come about?
Well, it's another one of those pieces where I was actually caddying for Bernhard in Charlotte, and we have the Air and Sea Show back then here in Fort Lauderdale. Every year they get about 4 million people come to the beach, and it's just a terrific show. And my favorite weekend of the year, my dad was a pilot. I'm a huge flight fan. Bordering on fetish, I really like it a lot. Sound of Freedom is really important in the Holden family. But we were gonna miss the Air and Sea Show that year, and I will never forget on that Wednesday, Bernhard, I was waiting in the car for him. He was going into physio to get some work on it, and he had never said a word, but he came back and his arm was bandaged up from his arm all the way up to his elbow, wrist all the way up to his elbow, and I'm, what on earth is going on? And he said, well, we're wheels up, we're flying home in an hour. It looks like I've got a torn tendon in my left wrist. And my goodness gracious. So we flew home. I was obviously devastated not getting to work that week, and even more devastated that I was going to miss the Air and Sea show. It's really hard to get to, and we always had a hotel. And we went down to watch Friday practice, and my wife said, why don't you pull in that hotel right there, the Bahia Mar, and see if they got any rooms. I'm like, honey, are you crazy? I mean, these things are sold out 6 months in advance. There's no way. And she was pretty adamant. She said, pull in there. And I went in, and lo and behold, they had a room, and it was available, and we got it. And just by chance, the team was staying there. Here comes the guys in their blue flight suits, and they all come walking into the lobby. And I asked them, I said, any of you guys play golf? And they all raised their hand and started a relationship that was really a great two-way relationship. I started being their golf guy, I guess you could say. And then they had a very, very great cause. They had the Warrior Foundation out in San Diego. Again, an incredible wounded initiative. And Admiral Wisely called me and asked me if I would help them with their golf tournament. And as you mentioned, I ended up doing that for many, many years, 9 years. And it led me to rarefied air. And frankly, it was great for Caddy for a Cure because I was a fan. And I got to always understand what it was like to have that rarefied air. And it actually helped me. I get used to being around all the tour players, but when you come out at a Caddy for a Cure experience, I still see that glimmer in your eye, and I know what it's like to have a first-time experience. And being with the Blue Angels is something that I'll never forget, and it was hugely impactful on my family and I, and especially Kayla as she grew up in this environment, understanding really from the inside out how the military works.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, you've been so devoted to so many wonderful causes. And I know that people talk about golf. Golf is therapeutic. And I understand from your perspective, you know, in terms of your love for the game. What's your view of that and these wounded warriors and how they might benefit from being able to play a round of golf? Because I know that it's a great way to decompress, because when you're hitting a golf ball, you really can't think about anything else. I mean, you know, it's weird, but just the way if you swing at a ball, you got to think about what you're trying to do. What's your thoughts about that with the military?
I had a wounded warrior several years ago who had lost both his legs, and we had a few warriors that day with us, and some of the other ones were suffering from PTSD, and one had TBI, traumatic brain injury, and yet his body was whole, and the one who had the amputations looked at the other one and made a comment to me. He said, you know, I've had it pretty rough. I've lost both my legs. He goes, but I wouldn't trade spots with that guy for anything. And that one really hit home to me. And we often look at the wounded and we think of someone that's lost their arm or they lost their leg or been a burn victim or whatever. And those are all tragic. And they are, in fact, you know, very serious injuries. But having that comment, I know that some of the stuff that's going on inside these guys with the emotional disturbances and the sleep disturbances and the flashbacks and everything that they have, that, you know, they're living a silent pain that no one can really see. And golf is so therapeutic. It, you know, you get out in God's fresh green air, green grass and fresh air, the opportunity to be out there for 4 or 5 hours with a few of your good, tight friends, it is a respite. It is a place where you can go, and it's a happy place where you can kind of forget about everything else that's going on. And we know that. I've seen it as a PGA professional and growth of the game initiative we have within the PGA of America. I know that golf is great for these men and women, and I just can't encourage it enough. And that's been really one of the greatest blessings with Caddy for a Cure, is being able to get people further involved in the game.
Well, you're definitely a blessing, Russ. I got so caught up talking with you today. I know you also have this really important initiative, but we only have another minute for you, is Clubs for Charity. If you just give us maybe, and I hate to put you on the spot, like a 30-second just quick overview of Clubs for Charity and how that works.
Sure. We had an idea where we could help more charities, and we all know that even in these COVID times that we live in right now, where if you have some clubs around the house that maybe you want to give to your favorite charity of choice, but maybe are a little short on the cash and times are tough, we have golf clubs that are right there that are valuable and have valuable. So we created a site, clubsforcharity.com. You can go there and make a donation to any charity that you like, no matter what that is, as long as they're a 501c charity. We'd be happy to to help you with that transaction. And it's just awesome thing that we thought up here, and it's been very successful and helping many, many charities.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I got a few sets of sticks in my garage. I know my little guy wants to start swinging those, but he's still a little small for it. But it's a great cause. So, Russ, I just want to thank you again. You know, talk about pieces. I ran into you at the FedEx tournament, Ridgewood, twice. And, you know, we were hanging out and, you know, standing in the rough. We were talking. I never thought I'd have the honor of bringing you on. It's been really a great show for us to have you join us. It means the world to me to be, you know, have a guy of your caliber and character and integrity. Keep on doing what you're doing. I urge everyone to go to caddyforacure.com. It's a wonderful experience. And Russ, I really do appreciate it. So I wish you all the best, and Kayla and your family. I just want to conclude the show. Next coming Sunday, we have Alyssa Montanti on. She is the founder of Global Medical Relief Fund. And Russ was talking about the brave military who sadly has loss of limbs. Alyssa Montanti has been able to help little kids who sadly lost limbs in horrible accidents and bombs and all these horrors of war, bring them to the United States and do so many wonderful things to make them whole and make them complete. So I want to wish everyone a great rest of this beautiful weekend. Make the most of it. God bless you. I hope you tune in next week. Take care.